New York Sports with us. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 306. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. We're going to get to the Giants in a little bit. And two glaring things that jumped out at me. Two obvious things that, you know, one I knew for sure and I wasn't sure. Me and Fliegelman actually talked about it. I believe it was on air. We talked about it yesterday about whether or not they would show something in particular. And the answer is, yeah, they showed it. On some level, and maybe there'll be more to come as we get closer to the draft in this show. But they did, given that, you know, they did show that a certain element to the draft and to the quarterback room was absolutely true. And then something we saw with Saquon Barkley that I think we had an idea, but this reaffirms it for me with Saquon Barkley. And maybe justifies a little bit more of Tiki Barber's comments. 888-808-1019. We'll take a couple more baseball calls. We will get to the Giants, though, because I honestly find the show fascinating. I actually think it's... I enjoy this. I enjoy this episode of The Office with Joe Shane starring. I enjoy this version of Hard Knocks more than I enjoy the typical version of Hard Knocks. I really do. I know there's some football, and you see the players, and there's these side stories. As a Giant fan, watching them go through their decision-making and how deals are made and how the GM discusses things and the terminologies they use and to get inside meeting in the draft. Like, it's one thing to have what we've seen over the last 20 years, however long Hard Knocks has been doing this, to see meetings of players getting cut or to see talking about, you know, position players and who's going to make it. And all right, so, you know, we know we got to whittle this running back room down and you have discussions about who's doing this, who's doing that. We've seen those kind of meetings, but to be a fly on the wall of the draft process meetings, to see Brian Daboll just throw and pepper quarterbacks with terminology and route running questions and like going over film. Like, I thought it was extremely fascinating. Really, really fascinating stuff. So we're going to get to Hard Knocks, but I still want to take your baseball calls. They're up here, and I want to get to it because obviously the Yankees are a disaster. The Mets continue to play well. Lindor is leading them. You got to give him credit, man. Lindor is having one hell of a season. And I don't want to, you know, speak out of school, but Fliegelman did say something that I'm going to put out there. Hopefully he's okay with it being on air. Even as a Met fan, and I know we all love Pete Alonso, it really is offensive that he's the one all-star from this team. Like, it really is. It sucks. I mean, I know you shouldn't care, and ultimately, it doesn't matter. It's just an all-star game. But if anybody deserves recognition on this team, I could think of several players that I would be giving credit for this turnaround, several players that I would deem more significant to this season. I mean, it's not even close. Pete Alonso isn't even in the top five players that have been the most important offensive players for this team. He's not. And to watch Lindor carry them and to watch Nimmo go apo taco on a ball I cannot believe got out and already have 15 home runs and almost 60 RBIs, and to watch him carry this team on a nightly basis, and then to see Pete Alonso heading to the All-Star game, you know, so he could hit dingers and, you know, have fun and put on a performance. It would bother me a little bit if I were a Met fan. It would bother me a little bit. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Kevin in Copaig. What's up, Kevin?
What's up, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Mets are 45-45 with a zero run differential and have gone 5-5 in their last 10.
They are the epitome of average.
It's just crazy to see that zero run that differential.
It is. It is crazy. And, you know, it's just funny, too, because it is wild to, like, the Yankees are the Mets are currently out of playoff position. They are 500, and it feels like you'd rather be a Met fan than a Yankee fan. The Yankees are 17 games over 500, sitting, you know, right at the first overall wild card position, three games out of first place, and it's just like, man, I'd rather be the Mets. It's crazy.
Lindor and Nimmo, Mr. Smile and the happiest man in baseball. Quite the 1-2 punch.
Yeah, they certainly have been. They certainly have been.
And BT and Sal have to do an apology tour. They were hitting on Lindor in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, listen, we all say the things. You have to own up to it sometimes. I called the Mets dead at the end of that 10-game homestand against Arizona. But
it's like Groundhog's Day, though. It's April. It's just every April, and then everyone just starts ragging on them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. It is. Yeah, listen, the problem is last year they had the June swoon, and he wasn't anywhere to be found. Like, he needs to be there. He needs to help the team when they're struggling. And now, right now, everybody's doing great. He's doing the greatest. But
yeah, but Nimmo was doing terrible. I mean, for the longest time, yeah. All of a sudden, yeah. he's just been torrid.
No doubt. Yeah, Nimmo's been incredible. And watching him, you know, it's his energy, obviously. I mean, listen, does part of me think the sprinting to first base on a walk is a little, you know, fake hustle? But right now, I mean, just the way he's played and the power surge. I mean, it's one thing just to get on base, and that he's kind of been like that sabermetrics, you know, guy that they all love. The sabermetrics guys, his on base percentage, his pitch selection, his amount of pitch seen, like all that kind of stuff. We haven't really seen this kind of power out of him, though. I mean, he's hitting. I mean, that ball, that's a power hitter's home run to go the other way and have it carry out, you know, 380 or whatever it was to get over the fence. That's, I mean, he's showing things I wasn't sure he was capable of. He's been incredible.
I think the whole season comes down to Alonso, though, because he's just really, I mean, 18 home runs, but doesn't feel like it. He's just really been kind of.
Yeah, no doubt.
Just trucking along.
You know, it's funny, too, because we were talking about it. Maybe, you know, this could be a talking point. If you want to go through, like, there's two different aspects to look at the lineup right now. There's the past and the future, right? Who has been the biggest part of this rejuvenation offensively? Who has been some of the bigger names that have carried this team back to 500 as they are right now? With, as he said, a zero-run differential. They are the only team in baseball who scored the exact number of runs and given up the exact. They've scored 433. They've given up 433. And, you know, giving up the 433 is the problem, obviously. But they're the only team in baseball with a run differential. For example, right, like we just said, right now, Met fans are feeling on top of the world. They're 500. They have a zero run differential. They're 5-5 over the last 10. And they are a game and a half out of a wild card position. The Yankees are 3.5 games up as the number one wild card. They have a plus 99 run differential. They've scored 100 runs more than they've given up. And yet, and rightfully so, I'm not trying to say that it's backwards. It's absolutely the case. One team you feel really good about, and the other team is absolutely in free fall. It's crazy. That's how good the start was. But back to my point about the Mets, if you were to look at who's been most impactful and then who you need to be most impactful, it actually might change, because I agree with you. Alonso's not on the first list. If you want to give me the top five or six players, like, he might even fall that far back, and it's a lineup of nine guys. Like, let's go through the names who have been more important than Pete Alonso to get to where they've been. Obviously, Lindor, Nimmo, Vientos, J.D. Martinez. I mean, you could even make the case, as Fliegelman did for, we had this conversation, Bader. Right? I mean, Alvarez. That's six right there. I forgot Alvarez. How could I forget Alvarez? He's probably four. Or three, even. But J.D. Martinez, I'm going to give three just because it felt like he really got it going. I know Alvarez came back and the record they have while he's winning and the impact he has, no doubt. I don't want to dismiss it. It's just Nimmo and Lindor have been the best. J.D. Martinez kind of got it started. That walk-off home run against Miami, to me, is still the biggest hit of the year because, I don't know. I know they played well for a while now, but if you lose that series, right, if you come back from London and you lose two out of three to the lowly Marlins, like, it just would have been a bad taste in your mouth. So that walk-off home run against Florida, for me, was as big as a hit the Mets have had all year. And then, obviously, right around that week and a half, and he's had other big hits, but he was playing great. And it was him and Lindor that got it going. So, I mean, right off the top, you got Lindor, Nimmo, J.D. Martinez, Alvarez. Before you even get to Vientos, before you even get to Bader, who's probably been just as clutch. If you get to Taylor, who's probably had just as many big hits as Pete Alonso over this stretch. I mean, you could be looking at the eighth most important offensive player of this stretch has been Pete Alonso. But moving forward, it can't be that way. Like, I understand everything I just said. It's not going to continue for the next 70 games. Pete Alonso can't be the eighth most important offensive player moving forward. He's got to get more involved. He has to. Because very much like a basketball game with runs, right? It's so you're down 20. It's easy to get back to making it a ball game. It's different to get over the hump and take the lead. It is different, and this Met team has struggled to get over 500. They're at 500 now, but they have been there before. They've been a game over, a game under 500. They've really yet to take that next step and beat 2, 3, 4, 5 games over 500, and with two more against Washington and then a 3-set against Colorado heading into the All-Star break, you're hoping that you are going to get at least 2 or 3, 4 games over 500 here. That's what you're looking to do to justify what you're hoping the general manager will do. But they're 5-5 over their, they're 5-5 over their last 10. And they've been waffling a game over, a game under, a game over, a game under. They need to get over this hump because I don't want to say it's easy, but it's easier to get back in the mix. They've done that already. They took a terrible start and they've turned it around. They're 500. They're in front of they don't have anybody else in front of them but the wild card teams. They're a game and a half back of San Diego, who they do have the tiebreaker against. But you got to build momentum here, and it's one thing to get back into the mix. It's another to take the lead. Rob in Brooklyn. What's up, Rob?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm okay. So, look, I'm a Yankee fan.
Okay.
And I'm concerned about the last 20 games.
Of course.
We all should be if you're a Yankee fan, right?
Of course.
But I'm optimistic at the same time, okay?
Yeah.
I would never have thought that Stanton would have made that much of a difference with his absence. But if you look at statistics, he's having the second-best season since he's been with the Yankees. And he changes the lineup. Of course, now you have three players you have to really worry about. If you get those type of players, make the other players better. Of course, you have to be concerned about Soto, Judge, and Stan. 2, 3, and 4, right? And then now Ben Rice has been exerting himself, even though he's been getting better.
Yeah.
And it makes all the players better. Now also, I think, consideration, Cole is coming back. He's working himself back into the rotation.
Yeah.
And, he has to build back his arm strength and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all understand. I mean, listen, I don't know if Cole will, I'm hoping. I don't know if Cole will get back to last year's Cy Young form necessarily, but I think we all understand. I don't know that. But I'm just saying, I think there is a level that he will get back to. I think there's almost a guaranteed level. It might not be his best as a Yankee, but it will certainly be better than what we've gotten so far, and the best pitcher in the rotation. Yeah,
exactly. And so, baseball is a long season. All sports is 162 games. So Yankees came out the gate; they was tearing it up.
Yep.
Now they're going for a little dry spell, and All-Star break. They get back healthy with all their players, and they're going to be okay. I'm concerned, but I'm like, okay, wow. Oh, let's tear up the team, let's buy the manager, let's get a new GM.
Right.
People going crazy. I think they're going to be okay. They're going to reset. And they're going to have, after All-Star break, I think they're going to be a better team. They're going to get it together, and they're going to shock, I ain't going to say shock the world, but they're going
to. Yeah, I mean, they shouldn't be in a position to shock the world. Listen, I love your positivity, and I'm on many things, I'm right there with you. I think this team is still a playoff team. I do. I still think they're a playoff team. It might be a wild card. Baltimore is very good, and this Yankee team's floundering right now, and they do desperately need to make moves. There's no doubt about it. They need to make moves. But here's the real question, because your positives, I agree Cole will be back and will pitch to a level of competence and excellence. It might just not be last year. We'll see. It could be, but we'll see what it is. But I expect him to be a legitimate ace, on some level. And I think as much as I just got on Juan Soto there, it's more of just like, hey, come on, let's go, Juan. We need you. They need him. They need him, and he hasn't been there for the last 3 weeks. They need him. I still think he's a tremendous player. I still want him re-signed, and I think he will snap out of it and get hot. I think he will. But they need him to do it now. But the question is, like, for me with the Yankees, to me it's, hopefully Stanton comes back, and we know when Stanton comes back it takes a while to get a swing. I'm concerned about that, that it could be August before we see him, and then, you know, mid-August before, or even late August before I feel like he's back to where he was before he got hurt. And I think Jason Dominguez will be back sometime mid to late August, apparently. You know, I guess it's taking a while. And they'll add, and we'll see what they can add. But here's the question. If you really want to be positive about the New York Yankees and their chances of winning a championship, and that's ultimately what we're trying to do, right? As much as I'll tell you there's levels of success with the Yankees, and I don't believe it's World Series or failure. I mean, on some level, that's the case, but it's not just ultimate disastrous failure. Last year was an absolute disastrous failure. Losing in the ALCS is miserable at the moment, but when I look back on the year, I don't view it as a disgusting, absolute failure when they won 99 games and played in the ALCS. I don't view that as a just colossal failure along with every other year that you don't win a World Series. There are levels of failure, levels of success. But when we're talking about trying to win a championship, to me, some of the biggest questions are not who they're going to get, not when Stanton comes back or when Dominguez comes back. Is Anthony Volpe, Alex Verdugo, and Gleyber Torres, are those players for the New York Yankees? DJ LeMahieu, I'm not going to add to that list necessarily because I think they can replace third base at the trade deadline on some level or get an infielder. And plus, I don't have any faith in him right now. I just don't. I know he's gotten a couple hits lately. I just don't see it. So I'm not going to put him on that list. But there are three players that they're not going to replace necessarily. There are three players there who are going to be on this team. There are three players there that are important to this lineup who I do believe in on some level, who were a huge part, maybe not Gleyber, although I think he's a huge, I'm going to keep him on the list. Two of them for sure were a huge part of why they got off to the start they got off to. Volpe was excellent to start the year. Verdugo was very good and a key member and a guy who brought the juice and the swagger that they needed, it felt like. He was very big for them and playing great defense. Like, we dismiss it now and he's been terrible for a month, but are they players or not? Like, I think that's going to be as big a point and as big a crux as, I mean, I'm not even talking rotation right now. Let's just talk lineup. Those three players, that's where we're going to find out whether or not this Yankee team is a winning Yankee team or a failing Yankee team, because there's only so much you could do at the deadline. You could add some players, you can't replace everybody. Volpe, Verdugo, Gleyber Torres. Are those three players players or are they garbage? Are those three meaningful guys that can give you good at-bats, that can be the bottom end of a lineup, that can do something? Or are they just flat-out bad and you can't trust them and they're not going to do anything this year? Because if they're just bad hitters, if they're just bad, and everyone gives you the age, oh, like I saw a bunch of stuff. This is what happens when you have an old aging team. They don't play well in June and July. They don't play well down the stretch of the season, and that's why the Yankees have struggled so much over the last few years. They're old and they're tired. Gleyber Torres isn't old. Verdugo's not old. Anthony Volpe certainly isn't old. Are those three players, are they players or not? And I'm not going to, you know, we can hate Brian Cashman for a lot of different things. I'm not going to hate Brian Cashman for trusting those three players. You might want to. Go ahead. I'm not going to. Gleyber Torres had an 800 OPS last year, and it's on a walk year. I don't think anybody expected him to be this bad. Verdugo, you want to kill Brian Cashman? Nobody wanted Verdugo more than the captain. Nobody. Nobody wanted Verdugo more than Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge was in the ear of Brian Cashman to go get Verdugo. And Anthony Volpe is their top 10 prospect, is a top prospect who had a great career in the minor leagues, who's a young, promising kid who's shown it at times, who plays a great, already won a gold glove, and can run and steal bases. I don't know why he hasn't, and I'm hoping he will start doing that, but those three players needed to be relied upon. And I had no problem heading into the season relying on them. And I had no problem over the first 2.5 months, as doing so led to the best record in baseball. Are they done? Are they miserable? Are they garbage? Because if they are, the Yankees aren't going to win. Plain and simple. If those three players are garbage, and that's what they've been for the last month, then the Yankees have no chance. Are those three guys players? We'll talk about who they can get at the deadline. We'll talk about guys coming back from injury and Stanton and Jason Dominguez. But is Verdugo, Glaber, and Volpe useless players, or are they important players? That will dictate what this offense will be throughout the rest of the year and into the postseason.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Talking asteroids with Eddie Scazzeri, as we talked about it yesterday, as there are, I guess it passed already today. An asteroid was 900,000 miles away from us, and that's deemed by NASA to be relatively close and something we need to keep an eye on. Amazing enough, but we'll get to that. We'll get to planet killer asteroids on another show. Right now, we're taking your baseball calls. We will get to the football. I want to, you know, get through these Yankee calls I see and the Met calls as we get through. Maybe 4 o'clock, we'll talk a little Giants and Hard Knocks. 888-808-1019. And again, I think I'm surprised they show. I mean, I don't know if I'm surprised because we all knew it and it would have been stupid to hide it. But some interesting stuff came out of that Hard Knocks episode. Let's get to Brian in Springfield. What's up, Brian?
Hey, Chris, how you doing? Big fan of the show.
Oh, thank you, buddy. What's up?
Hey, what you were saying earlier about the players that need to step up. You were saying, like, Verdugo, Torres, and Volpe.
Yes.
You got to add DJ LeMahieu in the next group
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, I don't know because I'm torn on that because I feel like they're going to go get an infielder at the deadline. I'd be surprised if they don't. And I just... I don't have faith in DJ LeMahieu anymore. Like, I've seen enough out of Volpe. I think last year you saw enough out of Glaber. And I think we saw from Verdugo. I haven't seen anything, you know, from DJ LeMahieu that makes me feel like he can. So I understand your point. I think they can get by if they just decide to not play DJ LeMahieu. I don't think they can not play Volpe. I don't think they can not play Verdugo. I don't think they can not play Glaber Torres.
Yeah, I would like to see them go out and maybe get like a Jonathan India and replace Glaber at second. Make a move like that.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't know if that. I don't want. First of all, that's going to take a lot, Jonathan India. I think he's still got a couple of years under control. I mean, I saw someone put up the value of Jonathan India. It might take you a top prospect, like the top prospect. It might take you Spencer Jones to get Jonathan India. I don't know what the market is for Jonathan India. I'm certainly open to that. I like him. You probably put him at the top of the order and feel pretty good about it. I can probably move him there and play Glaber at third or vice versa or something. I'm looking to replace DJ LeMahieu there. Like, if I make that move, I'm not... Because then if I do that, then I play him at second and jettison Glaber or do whatever, you know, trade him for a bag of balls. Now I got DJ LeMahieu or Oswaldo Cabrera playing third. It's not good enough for me. So I get the fit of India. Maybe India can play third base, but I'm still of the belief that I'm going to get more out of Gleyber Torres than DJ LeMahieu the rest of the year. I still have visions of Gleyber playing the rest of this year where DJ, I'm at the point almost where they got to stop this. I understand why they're playing DJ. I get it. DJ, if he gets hot and can return to form, he is an impact player where Oswaldo Cabrera is not. I understand that. But how much time does he get? Now, he's gotten a couple hits the last 2 days. Maybe he's rounding into shape. I don't know. But I'm not so sure about it. Pat and Suffren. What's up, Pat?
Morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Pat. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. You know, just a couple things. I think that Boone could be in trouble, and here's why. I just think they could be desperate to, like, show that they're doing something, meaning, like, the, you know, the owners and Cashman or something, you know, So I think he could be in trouble there, just because it's just the losing is just so it's so persistent now, you know. I think he's a pretty good manager, you know, but I think he could be in trouble. And you know, the other thing too is, and this is just an age old thing with the Yankees. Every other team is just so sky high to play them. You know, the Yankees are coming to town, you know, and you know it just seems like that's part of it too. Like everybody's always so fired up to play them, you know.
I mean, I guess that you know they're the Yankees and they get your best shot. And you know, some years it felt like teams would be intimidated by the Yankees. I don't think that's the case anymore. Nor does that. Is that some sort of thing that the Yankees should, you know, I don't think anyone's intimidated of anyone anymore, to be honest with you. I could see that a little bit. I just don't think they're going to fire Boone yet. Like, I was just talking to Eddie because he came in here and was talking to me about the Yankees before we got into the asteroid conversation. And that's what happens. You talk Yankees, then you start thinking about planet killers. But I don't think they're going to fire a manager 17 games over 500. I don't think they're going to fire their manager. This is not George Steinbrenner. I understand. You wish it was. Maybe you wish it was. I don't necessarily wish it was. I don't. I love George. That's fine. He was a character. He also, in times like these, blew the franchise apart. And if you think they needed it, it didn't really work out too well until he was banished. But I just don't think they're, right now, when you look at them, they're 3.5 games up on a wild card position. They are battling with like the Twins and the Red Sox and the Royals. And as of right now, I just don't think they're in a position. They're not going to fire the manager. I'd be very surprised. I think they think very highly of him. He talked about it at the beginning of the year, asking every different person throughout the organization, other organizations. Boone is well thought of. Whether we like it or not, Boone's well thought of, and Brian Cashman is extremely well thought of. Right, that's the other, I mean, go every time Joel Sherman tried to do a piece on Brian Cashman, anytime you talk to anyone around baseball, they have nothing but the utmost respect for Brian Cashman and the 25 years of excellence of the New York Yankees. And that's how it's viewed around the league. You don't have to like it and understand why. I certainly wouldn't consider the last couple of years excellent, no doubt. But that's how it's perceived. Other GMs around baseball marvel at the idea, no matter how much money you can spend, constantly having a winning team for 30 years is something other teams can't comprehend. I'm not saying throw them a parade, because you know, but I just wanted to throw it out there as we started to have the conversation. Other teams marvel at Brian Cashman. And I think Aaron Boone is well thought of throughout the league. And I just don't think they're ready to fire Boone. It would have to get worse than this, which, hey, it might. But right now, I don't think so. Paul in White Plains, what's up, Paul?
Hey, Chris. I think one of the real big problems is they really missed Stanton.
Because
he could be a clutch. He could be a clutch hitter, and there were always times when he'd come through with that home run that would separate, that would give the Yankees the lead, and give them a cushion. I think that's one of the things. And one other question:
yep.
If you could trade a player on the Yankees, and this is hypothetical, of course,
yeah,
who would you trade?
If I could trade away one of the players on the Yankees?
Yeah, if you could trade away one of the players, it depends upon, obviously, who you would get.
Right,
but
clearly.
Who would you pick to go first?
I mean, for the health of the New York Yankees right now, if I could get anything in return, it would be Carlos Rodon. But I can't, considering...
you're not going to get anything from him.
And it's his contract. I mean, that's why I want him gone, because he's making a ton of money over the next few years, and I'm not sure he can pitch here. So if I could pull miracles, if I were playing MLB The Show and I could put forced trades on, then yeah, I would force Carlos Rodon. But there is no trading Carlos Rodon. There is no cutting Carlos Rodon. There is nothing else than pitching Carlos Rodon every fifth day. Now, you could bench him and give him a break, I suppose. I don't know how you do that with a roster spot. And we just saw the Mets get in trouble for fake Fugazi injuries. I don't know if you could do that with Carlos Rodon, but there's nothing else to do but to pitch him and hope he gets out of it. And you did see, I mean, to be fair, and I like to be fair, it's certainly a very much, you know, besides that, how was the show, Mrs. Lincoln? It is that. But he did turn it on and look pretty damn good for three innings. And had you know, a bunch of strikeouts and pitched fairly well. But I just, when things start to roll in the wrong direction, it's impossible to stop. He mirrors the team in so many ways. It's funny because he's only been here a year and a half, really. He mirrors the team in so many ways. They have struggle stopping losing streaks. He has trouble stopping skids. They can't deal with adversity. He can't deal with adversity. They got off to a great start. He got off to a great start. They've been miserable for a month and a half. He's been miserable for a month and a half. Like, it's amazing. It's amazing. He mirrors the team almost identically.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, Mick Monagle here with you. We've talked a lot about the two baseball teams and obviously an important stretch leading into the All-Star break with both of them. Mets get off to a good start in these six games. The win over Washington, the Yankees are unfortunately the June and July Yankees yet again, and they lose to the Rays. But let's turn it to football for a second here, as obviously Hard Knocks with the New York Giants, off-season edition. Episode 2 was last night, and again, let's the overall thing of how much I'm enjoying it. Much more than I thought I would, honestly. I am enjoying it far more than I thought I would. I'm far more fascinated by it. I actually think I enjoy this version of it better than typical Hard Knocks. I honestly think I do. I know we're not seeing any guys hitting each other. There's no football being played, but I am fascinated by all this. And a couple of things about this Giant team in this episode jump out at me. First, let's start with the Saquon Barkley before we get to the quarterback situation. I think what we're learning and what we've now learned officially from Saquon Barkley's situation is neither side wanted to be together. I think what you've seen from this episode, which started with Joe Shane getting the email or the news that the salary cap is going to be about $15 or $20 million more than he expected. And that's how the episode starts, I believe, if I remember correctly. He gets that news, and suddenly it's like, ooh, I have new life on different things. And it didn't seem, what was the first thing that came out of his mouth? Oh, this might change the situation with Xavier. Like, he didn't. It wasn't, it might change the situation with X. It wasn't like, ooh, now we have money for Barkley. That wasn't it. And he continued to talk about it, asked about it, whether or not he would be willing to, you know, talking on the phone, a couple different people, play, you know, his guys, is he willing to wake up and lose Saquon Barkley? And more does it seem like he will. And then, honestly, Saquon Barkley, he can say all he wants, that he wanted to be a Giant for life. The final scene of this episode is a conversation on the phone between Joe Shane and Saquon Barkley. Listen to Saquon Barkley. Listen to the tone in Saquon Barkley's voice. Listen to how he handled that phone call. He's fed up with the Giants. And I think they were fed up with each other too, because as Joe Shane was prepping for his press conference at the Combine, which I also thought was fascinating, they were going over all the different things he's going to be asked. He was prepped for every possible scenario. I know they only speak once in a while, GMs, but that was an extensive prep session that he went through. And he even made a joke when asked about Saquon Barkley. He talked about, well, listen, I offered him a ton of money last year and he didn't take it. And the guy who was doing the prep with is like, I wouldn't say that. He's like, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to say that. But like, I think you could tell there was some resentment on both sides. I think Saquon Barkley was never happy with the offers he was getting from the New York Giants. And I think the Giants were surprised that that was Saquon Barkley's take. And I think ultimately by the end of this whole thing, the two sides were just not on the same page whatsoever from the beginning of this. And to be fair to Saquon Barkley, he got a contract that at the beginning of episode one, Joe Shane really had no idea that Saquon Barkley was capable of getting. But if you listen, because, you know, he's talked about, I wanted to be a Giant for life. He's gone back at fans who said, oh, well, you abandoned us. He went back at Tiki Barber, who said, you're dead to us, tongue in cheek. But, you know, going to Philadelphia, and his was, well, I didn't get a contract offer. Hey, well, everyone knows I wanted to be a Giant for life. And he even says in the phone call, well, you know, this is where I want to be. But he could not say it with less passion. He could not have handled that phone call. Now, I know they've probably had many phone calls, and it's not like, I don't know if it's the same. You know, Ryan Hurley, I'll tell you right now, Ryan Hurley calls me, and I could be mid-slumber at 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to pep up for that phone call more than Saquon Barkley did. Now, I know it's a different dynamic. Saquon Barkley's got a lot of leverage and a lot of ability. In fact, I'm nothing like Saquon Barkley. Anyway, but I know Saquon Barkley has a different situation, but like that phone call, he had no interest in talking to Joe Shane, and he had no interest in signing with the New York Giants. I'm convinced of it. Now, in the promo for next week's episode, he mentioned there's like a voiceover, and Shane is talking about the contract he offered Saquon. We're going to find out if he did offer Saquon a contract. Saquon has been public on social media saying he wasn't offered a contract. How could he abandon a team that never offered him a contract? So I guess we'll get to the bottom of that on some level. But they made an agreement that in the best interest of every party, he would go meet the market, get what his value is, and then come back to the New York Giants. And clearly, I'm thinking that's what happened. They didn't want to give the value that the Eagles did, and that's why he left. But it's just becoming clear that whether it was the negotiations of the year before during the playoff year when they tried to negotiate with him midseason, whether it was that offseason, whether it was this offseason, at some point prior to signing with the Eagles, it was dead. It was dead. I don't think Joe Shane had much of an interest in paying a 27-year-old quarterback already coming off a knee injury, considering the rest of the roster the New York Giants have. And I think something happened where Saquon Barkley was just fed up with how the New York Giants were handling it, fed up with the value that he deemed he was worth to the franchise and what the franchise actually deemed him to be worth. And it just was quite clear he didn't want to be a Giant. I think it's both. I think it works both ways. I think it's unfair of Saquon Barkley to go out there and say, hey, this is where I want it to be, blah, blah, blah. Like, listening to this, watching this, and I know I'm getting this from one phone call, but it just, it oozed. I didn't want to be here either. Hey, what's up, man? I'm doing some traveling. Yeah, good. Okay. Wait, what? What'd you say? Like, he's like, oh, just make sure you come back to us. What, come back around? Yeah, I mean, listen, I told you where I wanted to be. Like, it just felt like there was zero interest in those two parties. So let's just get to that, because it might be one of the big talking points out of it. But to me, it's less interesting. He's already gone. Clearly no issue interest between either team. Now we get to the quarterbacks, and we get to the coach, and we get to the GM, and we get to the idea of whether or not this franchise desperately wanted Jones back. And this was the plan the whole time. And all you Daniel Jones lovers, because let's be honest, it was out there that they wanted to trade up and take a quarterback. Everyone knew it. It was reported. Some fans thought it was a smokescreen. Whatever the case may be, in this episode, you saw Joe Shane walk across the building in Indianapolis during the combine and speak to the New England Patriots and flat out tell them, hey, if you're going to do anything with this pick, don't do anything without contacting us. The New York Giants were in on moving up and getting a new quarterback. And furthermore, not only was Joe Shane excited about it to run all the way across the building to talk to the Patriots about it, I've seen Brian Daboll in person. I worked with the Giants last year doing some radio stuff, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff. And I was in some of those press conferences. So I've seen him in person. We've watched him on TV. We've seen him in press conferences. I have never seen Brian Daboll as giddy as he was doing those quarterback interviews. And watching the interviews of the combine was extremely fascinating. And watching him pepper these guys with play formations. And, you know, he was, draw up your favorite play. What's your favorite play, your go-to play? I think he put it different ways to different guys, whether it was Drake May, it was give me your favorite play. If it was Daniels, he said, if you had to run one pass play the whole game, every time a pass play was called, it had to be that pass play, what pass play would you run? So he was asking the quarterbacks to draw up their favorite pass plays, and then he was on the fly asking them to change it, put it in the verbiage that the Giants use and come up with what they felt the Giants would ask him to do and different things and spit it back to him. And then mid-question on something else, hey, what was that play I brought up before? It was fascinating how Brian Daboll, who's brought here and hired here because of the quarterback whisperer nature of what he is, whether it's the Tua and Hurts in Alabama, whether it dating all the way back to Brett Favre with the Jets, or obviously Josh Allen in Buffalo. He was brought here because of his ability to work with young quarterbacks. And even Daniel Jones. Let's not leave out Daniel Jones, who got the best year of his career and after getting yelled at in the first game of the season 2 years ago. But watching Brian Daboll with these guys in that room, peppering them with questions, rapid fire, the smile on his face. I mean, I come out of that even more disappointed. Now, I don't know what these quarterbacks are going to be. And I thought May handled himself great. I thought Daniels handled himself great. I thought you could see interest from the Giants. But what I will tell you is, I understand I have this, I'm down on Daniel Jones. And I think it's fair. I don't think he's a bum, but I think my concerns, whether it's injury or just the amount of years we've seen it, are fair. And I wanted a new quarterback. And I'm even more disappointed than ever that it didn't happen, because one, this is what Brian Daboll does. And two, watching Brian Daboll work with these young quarterbacks. Now, again, I'm not privy to anybody else in the league. That might be typical. Those rooms might look like that no matter who's talking, what offensive coach is dealing with. I'm sure you get into a room with McVay talking to a young quarterback, it looks just like that, or just as impressive, or McVay has just as much of a smile. But Brian Daboll was brought here because of his ability to, one, run an offense, which I'm excited now that he's the play caller, but two, develop young quarterbacks. And unfortunately, Daniel Jones is not that. He has a big contract. He's coming off injuries. It's been multiple years. It's no longer the excitement of a new, fresh, young, what could be. I know there's a lot of fans out there who still put Daniel Jones in that what could be category. I don't. But watching those interviews, watching this coach interact with them, it is going to be the biggest disappointment in the last, since Tom Coughlin and all the different coaches the Giants have had over the years. The biggest disappointment that I will experience as a Giant fan surrounding all of this coaching disaster, if Brian Daboll gets fired without ever really getting his hands on a young quarterback, it's going to feel like a waste. It's going to feel like a waste. And watching those meetings, watching Joe Shane walk across the building to talk to the Patriots, there is no doubt the question has been answered. The New York Giants were in the market for a new quarterback. What does that mean? It means Daniel Jones is sitting at home and maybe he was unsure. He knows it now. What does it mean? He's got one more year to get it figured out, because they were pretty damn excited to possibly move on. Now, they didn't. J.J. McCarthy was the only quarterback available when the pick was made, and they didn't deem him worthy of it. But I'm impressed that the New York Giants allowed that to be shown on some level, and it's clear that Brian Daboll is excited about dealing, and so hopefully he can get it back with Daniel Jones, because working with young quarterbacks, I thought Brian Daboll, I mean, he shines talking about running the 40 and putting a pile of wings there and the fun that they had. But, I mean, he just lit up the room in those meetings. And we saw, obviously, Neighbors have the meeting, and he obviously got drafted. So just all of this was fascinating. But we answered a couple of questions. One, Saquon Barkley, as well as the Giants, were never a marriage. John Mara is the only one in this whole show that seemed interested in getting back together. It seemed like Joe Shane and the rest of the Giants were all into getting divorced, and it really sounded like from that phone call that Saquon Barkley himself was done with it all. The only guy who comes off as desperate to keep it together is John Mara. And then you now found out it's not a smokescreen. It wasn't nonsense. The New York Giants were in the market to trade up and get a new quarterback. And then the other thing that comes out of it, we'll find out when the Burns trade gets made. It's a second pick and a fifth overall. It started with a one, need a one. Then it became two twos. Then at the end of the episode, you see him saying, why the hell do I have to give up a seven? Like, ultimately, for Burns, Joe Shane got a pretty good deal. A 2-5 from where it started, pretty good deal. And I think he comes off very smart. I think he comes off great in this thing. And I actually think the show is far more fascinating than I ever expected it to be. And watching it, it feels like the Giants are in good hands. Doesn't mean they'll win, but I think he's kind of going the way the NFL is going, where we're devaluing the running back, we're trying to get a young, cheap quarterback, you're trading for pass rushers, you're allowing safeties, even if they're talented, to leave. Like, these are the trends of the smarter teams in the NFL, and that's what the Giants are doing. And to get behind the scenes and see all this stuff was extremely fascinating. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out. But those are the couple things that jump out at me. Yes, the Giants were looking for a new quarterback. The coach would have been perfect to do so. And Saquon Barkley, we know he's gone. We know he's with Philadelphia. But ultimately, if we want to look for blame or closure or what happened, somewhere along the line, Saquon Barkley wanted out as well. I don't believe him. At the end, I always wanted to be a Giant. I don't believe it. Listening to that phone call, I don't believe it. That's fair, unfair. It's my opinion, my assessment from watching the show.